All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, January 28th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is 32 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. Looks like you got a few little sprinkles of snow out there, but not too bad. And hey, spring is on the way. Today is also the 30th anniversary of the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster. I don't know if anyone remembers that. It happened on my 18th birthday, so do the math. Where do we leave off yesterday? Title of the show, Zika, Gates, Global Warming and Eugenics. And yeah, it was quite an interesting show. There were some connections that were connecting as we were doing the show. Just things that I hadn't thought about. And something that came out after the show is how interesting it is that it seems to be that there's all these diseases out there now that are affecting the brain. Especially with this big-ass brain research project going on, DARPA, Google, and all the other mad scientists getting involved. You know, I want to make a side note here. Last night I was checking through my DARPA daily email blurb that I get. I have a search scraper that goes out, and every night at like midnight, it dumps me an email of anything new that I found on the web with DARPA in the title. And so I'm scrolling down, it's right before bed, scrolling down. And what do I see? I see one of my shows. One of my shows showed up in the big scrape search. So I'm hoping that other people are getting it that way as well. It was on someone else's website, so that was cool. But it was the show from 2 days ago that talked about the DARPA brain implant. So, all right, anyway, this was titled Zika, Gates, Global Warming, and Eugenics. And we stitched a bunch of things together. We kind of looked at good old Brazil and how Brazil seems to be sold down the river. I don't know. We found a little more, too, about Zika that we're going to touch on after I get through some of what we left off on yesterday. So we made it through Zika. We looked at the BRICS Bank. We looked at Rousseff. We looked at the Brazil also wanting to separate themselves from the world internet and make their own little separate internet. I don't know. Seems to me like the Southern Hemisphere has been set up to be invaded by these genetically modified mosquitoes. And even more interesting, don't I open my Facebook feed this morning and I don't see one, but two stories now pitching the exact same theory. Exactly. Exact same theory. Exact same theories that we were pitching yesterday involving Bill Gates. And, you know, I even went through and watched that COP get carbon quotient down to zero TED conference that Gates did back in 2010. Man, is he evil. And, you know, he was the one talking about mosquitoes in the very beginning. I found three or four different articles yesterday as well that show the financial ties between Oxitec and Bill Gates and some of the research money that was involved. And there also were postings. Actually, here, let's go here. Just because. This is on Oxitec's own website, April 29, 2014. This Bill Gates infographic reveals that the world's deadliest animal, and it's not even close, is a mosquito. And it was on his own personal blog. And, of course, here we have Oxitec posting Bill Gates' blog stuff on their corporate page. It was just very odd to see. Anyway, where do we end up? We ended up looking at more infectious pathogens, this time Alzheimer's. There is now a study that is showing that there's an algae substance. It's BMAA, I think it was called. And I don't even have that up anymore. But it's in algae, gets into the water, and now they've discovered by testing on mice that it causes amyloid plaques just like some of the other dementias, like Alzheimer's. Now, even more interesting is that they're really thinking now that Alzheimer's is transmissible. And, you know, we kind of guessed it a long time ago, but now proof proof is in the pudding. And it might be coming from a lot of different places, whether it be blood transfusions or dental work. They're thinking maybe the prions can be passed from one human to another. They had that whole cadaver thing where they were using the pituitary gland, I believe it was. And apparently these people, these cadavers, pituitary, were all infected with CJD that then got passed on to these people that received the growth hormone. Now those people are dying and they're doing autopsies and they're going, oh goodness. But we're also seeing now that Tom Insel, the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, has gone over to Google, that there is a big push as part of this brain project, and we read that yesterday, to diagnose, and not just slowly, but rapidly, to diagnose with some solid numbers and not just somebody talking to you. They're looking for blood numbers. They're looking for tells. They want to be able to diagnose mental disease easily. And we found out diagnosing mental disease has never been easy, and it's always kind of been a guessing game. Well, we could have told you that, as they're giving you drugs. They don't even know how they work in your brain. You know, that's what makes you wonder about how they're handing out all these drugs to these kids, saying they have ADD, they have this, they have that, they have the other thing. And then we see all these violent actions happening over the last few years as the prescription rates go through the roof. It really makes you wonder what's going to happen once they actually figure out what's going on. Well, get this out. Get this. Check this out. Language, and I think this is where we left the end of the show. Language could diagnose Parkinson's, ALS, and schizophrenia long before lab tests. And yeah, Tom Insel was talking about having them make him a smart app that could listen to your voice and then diagnose you with what mental disease you have. They talk about diagnosing multiple diseases right now. First one is psychosis. Psychiatrists at Columbia University interviewed 34 young adults at risk for psychosis, a common sign of schizophrenia that includes delusions and hallucinations. 2.5 years and 5 of the subjects had developed psychosis. The remaining 29 remained free of the disorder. A specially designed algorithm combined the initial interviews collectively to look for language features that distinguish the two groups and found psychosis correlated with shorter sentences, a loss of flow and meaning from one sentence to the next, and less frequent use of the words that, which, and what. When later tested on each individual interview, the program predicted who did and who did not develop psychosis with a 100% accuracy. So there you go. Parkinson's disease. Now, Parkinson's, schizophrenia and Parkinson's, by the way, are two diseases, and ALS, which is number three diseases that DARPA's been working on brain implants for and finding out what buttons to push to cause the brain to produce certain chemicals that might help alleviate some of the symptoms from these three diseases. So Parkinson's is number two. 27 subjects in a study at Falvalero University in Argentina listened to recorded sentences containing verbs associated with specific hand shapes such as applaud and punch. And we finished this. This is where we ended at the end of the show yesterday. As soon as they understood the sentence, participants pushed a button while keeping both hands either flat or in a clenched fist position. Healthy subjects responded more quickly when the verb and the hand shape were compatible. Flat for applaud, clenched for punch, compared with when they were incompatible. Subjects with early stage Parkinson's disease, however, showed no difference in their reaction time, and such disconnects could serve as an early sign of the disease before the onset of severe problems. So, of course, the mad science doctors could then insert themselves into your life and try to cure you. Last but not least, the amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, like I said yesterday, I think this is what Stephen Hawking has. ALS is typically characterized as a movement disorder, which can lead some patients to speak unclearly, because of muscle weakness. A new study led by Sharon Ash at the University of Pennsylvania shows that disease may also disrupt your grammar usage. So look out, grammar Nazis. 45 subjects were asked to narrate the events in a series of 24 pictures using their own words, and ALS patients produced more incomplete sentences, such as, quote, "and he is angry because it's," and more missing determinators, quote, "the owl flew around," unquote, and more errors in verb tense, quote, "and the deer pushed him off a cliff," unquote, compared with healthy control individuals. MRI scans revealed that people who made more grammatical errors also showed more deterioration of brain regions associated with language. Oh, that's pretty scary. So if you start noticing yourself messing up your grammar, look out. It's going to be the grammar psychiatric Nazi suggesting that grammar analysis, and I hope they don't look at chat logs, suggesting that grammar analysis may be a relatively simple way to assess disease onset and severity. Well, if that's any indication, then I think this entire generation of newbies up and coming have some real problems upstairs. They don't use grammar at all and create their own language. In an ongoing follow-up study, Ash asked her colleagues, and her colleagues are analyzing now, patients' shorter utterances prompted by single pictures. So there we go. We are working, and I mean, that's just the newest story. We've already read three or four stories about how they are looking at some of your inflections and stuff to also diagnose disease. Now, this is something that I've brought up as a potential at some point in the future for them to be able to bag and tag everything we do and monitor us 24/7. Well, it's happened, people. Let them see you sweat. How interesting, too. It's right when that sports company that makes the underwear wearables that's now partnering with IBM and what was that other company we just read? They came up again just 2 days ago. Oh, the smart clothing that'll make you hot and cold. Yeah, it was the same damn company. Well, here we go. Let's see you sweat. What new wearable sensors can reveal from your perspiration? Yeah, they're going to be able to read what disease or what illness you have from your perspiration. When engineers at the University of California, Berkeley, again, a California university under the leadership of Janet Napolitano, said that they are going to make you sweat, it is all in the name of science. Specifically, it is for a flexible sensor system that can measure metabolites and electrolytes in your sweat, calibrate the data based upon skin temperature, and sync the results in real time to a smartphone. While health monitors have exploded onto the consumer electronic scene over the past decade, researchers say this device, which was reported in the January 28th issue of the journal Nature, which is today, is the very first integrated electronic system that can provide continuous, non-invasive monitoring of multiple biochemicals in your sweat. The advance now opens doors to wearable devices that can alert users to health problems such as fatigue, dehydration, and dangerously high body temperatures. Human sweat contains physiologically rich information, thus making it an attractive body fluid for non-invasive wearable sensors, said the study's principal investigator, Ali Javi, a UC Berkeley professor of electrical engineering and computer sciences. However, sweat is complex and it is necessary to measure multiple targets to extract meaningful information about your state of health. In this regard, we have developed a fully integrated system that simultaneously and selectively measures sweat analytes and wirelessly then transmits the processed data to a smartphone. Ding, 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 ding. Wow. You know, how amazing is it that we just like think, we think about all these horrible dystopian future gadgets and poof, they appear. I mean, I knew it wasn't too long before something like this was coming and here it is. And you know what? After that Consumer Electronics Show, that keynote I watched from IBM, thanks, Salvador, that it talked about the new wearables and the new 24/7 being able to monitor your health and everything right to your cell phone with a dashboard. You knew this was coming. Add to that cognition with back-end IBM Watson, Mr. Computer Doctor, super artificial intelligence, and you can see that this is going to be a pretty scary thing. I wonder if they're going to start weaving it into our clothes without us knowing. Remember, we looked at a project probably 3, maybe 4 months ago already to discover that Google and Levi's already had a project they were working on for wearable clothing. And this Rogue Armor, I think maybe was the name of that company, something Armor, Under Armour was the name of that company that now is working on the wearables with IBM for the sports stuff such as this. JV, and I also saw, we saw yesterday that DARPA was funding some of that research for that Under Armour company as well. JV worked with a study, co-lead authors Wee Guyo and Sam Imanjiminad, both of whom were postdoctorate fellows in his lab. Imanjiminad also has a joint appointment at the Stanford School of Medicine. And all three have affiliations with the Berkeley Sensor and Actuator Center and the Materials Science Division, where, at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. To help design the sweat sensor system, Javi and his team consulted exercise physiologist George Brooks, a USC Berkeley professor of integrative biology. Brooks said that he was impressed when Javi and his team first approached him about the sensor. Hey, having a wearable sweat sensor is really incredible because metabolites and electrolytes measured by the Javi device are virtually important for the health and well-being of an individual. Oh, they're vitally, sorry, not virtually, vitally important, says Brooks, and the co-author on the study. And when this study, I'm studying the effects of exercise on human physiology, we typically take blood samples. This non-invasive technology, someday it may be possible to know what's going on physiologically without needle sticks or attaching little disposable cups on you. The prototype, developed by Javi and his research team, packs 5 sensors onto a flexible circuit board. The sensors right now measure the metabolites, glucose and lactate, and the electrolytes, sodium and potassium, as well as your skin temperature. The integrated system allows us to use the measured skin temperature to calibrate and adjust the readings of sensors in real time. And this is important because the response of glucose and lactate sensors can be greatly influenced by temperature. Adjacent to the sensor array is the wireless printed circuit board with off-the-shelf silicon components. And the researchers used more than 10 integrated circuit chips responsible taking measurements from the sensors, amplifying the signals, adjusting the temperature changes, and wirelessly transmitting the data. The researchers developed an app to sync the data from the sensors to the mobile phones and then fitted the device onto smart wristbands, and smart headbands, of course, where you sweat. They then put the device, as well as dozens of volunteers, through various indoor and outdoor exercises. Study subjects cycled on stationary bikes or ran outdoors on tracks or trails for a few minutes to more than an hour. We can easily shrink this device by integrating all the circuit's functionalities onto one single chip, says Imanjiminad, and the number of biochemicals we target can also be ramped way up so we can measure a lot of things all at once. I'll put on a seatbelt. And that makes large-scale clinical studies possible, which will help us better understand athletic performance and physiological responses to exercise. Guys, we're all going to have to wear one of these things one day. I'm telling you, it's coming. Javi noted that one long-term goal would be to use this device for population-level studies. There you go, ding, 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 for medical applications, absolutely. And wait until they get now the little remote diagnostic kit for DNA diseases. They already have the little remote diagnostic kit that DARPA's working on for doing in-field disease and virus bacterial identification. It's not going to be too much longer. While Professor Javi's wearable non-invasive technology works well on sweating athletes, there is likely to be many more applications of this technology for measuring vital metabolite and electrolyte levels of healthy persons in daily life. Brooks also notes the potential for the device to be used to measure way more than perspiration. It can be adapted to monitor other bodily fluids from those suffering from illness and injury. Dun, dun, dun. For more information, this has been published in the journal called Nature. Well, now that they can read all of our metabolites and electrolytes, like I said, wait until they make the remote sensor that can take a look at a DNA swab and tell you what illnesses or diseases you might have. ScienceAlert.com, January 28, 2016. Yeah, we caught up to today's news. Massive study identifies single gene linked to the highest schizophrenia risk for the very first time. So not only are they working on the brain project and trying to diagnose mental disease and using DARPA brain implants to cure those diseases and coming up with smart apps to be able to diagnose those diseases and electrolytes that might one day be able to tell you whether or not you're more apt to have one of these diseases or not, now they have identified the very first gene that tells you you might have a high risk for schizophrenia. Don't worry about it. It's not what you're eating. It's not your dental surgery. And it's not the algae in your water. For the very first time, scientists have identified a specific gene variant that kicks a biological process called synaptic pruning into overdrive. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, I read actually a way more detailed article on this last night out of Scientific American. And it wasn't just schizophrenia that does the synaptic pruning in teenage years. It's schizophrenia as well as Parkinson's and some of the other diseases. So again, it's all those same diseases that the Brain Project and the DARPA brain implants, the whole Super Soldier program, it's the same brain diseases, disorders that they've been focusing on. Anyway, scientists have identified a specific gene variant that kicks a biological process called synaptic pruning into overdrive, which actively increases a person's risk for developing schizophrenia, one of the most common serious mental health conditions in the world. And yes, remember, we read it's epidemic now. By 2050, it's going to be, I don't even know. There was a story yesterday I had. It was a huge number of people in the world diagnosed with some sort of schizophrenic, brain-wasting, dementia-type disease. The causes of schizophrenia have eluded scientists for over a century. And again, it's eluded them for over a century, but many of these diseases could very well be related. Because it is virtually impossible to produce an accurate model of it in a living cell or in animals. Well, tell the monkey that one. They're doing some horrifying experiments on monkeys I just saw too. But now that scientists have identified which genes are likely involved, it can, if they can figure out how to mitigate their influence on the synaptic pruning during adolescence, they'll have a good shot at developing better screening and treatment options in the future. Of course they will. For the first time, the origin of schizophrenia is no longer a complete black box, says Eric Lander, director of the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard, ding ding, who was not involved in the research. While it is still in its early days, we've seen the power of understanding the biological mechanism of disease in other settings. Early discoveries about the biological mechanisms of cancer have led to many new treatments and hundreds of additional drug candidates in development. Understanding schizophrenia will similarly accelerate progress against this devastating disease that strikes young people. Back in 2014, A team of researchers from Harvard Medical School performed a landmark genetic study based on 36,989 schizophrenia cases and 113,075 control cases, and identified 108 regions of our DNA where genetic variants increase a person's risk of schizophrenia. Now, they've combined that with data from a genetic analysis of nearly 100,000 DNA samples from 30 countries, postmortem brain samples from almost 700 cadavers, and animal models looking at the biological processes involved to identify the one gene that's associated with the highest risk of developing schizophrenia. Known as the complement component 4, or C4 for short, the gene is associated with the immune system and brain development, and the researchers found that it varies in structure quite significantly between individuals. A genetic analysis of more than 65,000 people with and without schizophrenia identified that those who are carrying a particular variation of this gene, one that leads to a higher expression of it in the immune system, had a higher risk of developing schizophrenia in adolescence. You know, I wonder if it's some sort of like immune disorder. When the researchers tested this connection out in mouse models, they found that C4 is heavily involved in the process of synaptic pruning that naturally occurs in the brain as it matures through childhood and adolescence. The higher expression of the C4 gene, the more synapses, which are the connections between the neurons, get cut away. As Claire Wilson explains over at New Scientist, in the blood, C4 is known to bind with microbes as a signal to the immune cells that they should be eaten. By genetically engineering mice that lack C4, the team showed that it has a second role in the brain as well. Here, C4 binds to the neurons at the points where they connect with other neurons and signals that these connections or synapses should also be engulfed by immune cells. Well, I'm going to tell you, that is beyond frightening. If they have now found a way to make our immune system start engulfing our synapse connections, do you know what that means? That means they could do a full brain wipe. You know, I was just reading, there were like 4 stories about traffic in your brain and how your brain works and where your heaviest synaptic connections are the ones, of course, that you do a lot of studying on and where there's a lot of traffic that goes from one neuron to the next. They're like hubs. It was explaining it like hubs in an airport, right? You got JFK and, whatever it's called, Chicago's O'Hare and LAX. You know, those are your big hubs. And those are like your main regions that then all the traffic passes through to get from one region of your brain to another because they're utilized and exercised. Well, I'm going to read this last sentence we just read. Here, C4 in the brain binds to neurons at those points where they connect with other neurons, so those main hubs, and signals that these connections, these synapses, should be engulfed by the immune cells, meaning they should be pruned. Synaptically pruned and cut away. Now that's frightening. Brain tissue analyses of human schizophrenia patients showed that they tended to have fewer connections between neurons, which provides further evidence that the presence of a highly active C4 gene variant could be cutting away neural connections in the brain and putting an individual at an increased risk of developing the hallmarks of schizophrenia, such as hallucinations, severe emotional limitations, and a decline in cognitive function. Wow, that sounds like a pretty scary bioweapon to me. This is the very first time that researchers have connected a specific gene origin to a biological process that could be causing the links to the symptoms of the psychiatric disease. And the fact that the synaptic pruning is most active in the brain during adolescence further strengthens the case for C4 being the root cause. Adolescence is by far the most common age for schizophrenia symptoms to begin to appear. This study marks a crucial turning point in the fight against mental illness, yes, or learning how to create one, says Bruce Culpert, acting director at the National Institute of Mental Health. And hey, guess what? He is now, Bruce Culpert is the acting director of the National Institute of Mental Health, who just took over for good old Tommy Incel, who just went to go work for Google's Alphabet to come up with ways to diagnose and cure mental illness. How convenient is that? And of course, Google's Life Sciences is in bed with 23andMe Genetic Research, which is the wife of Google co-founder Sergey Brin, CEO. Yeah, this is all pretty dirty. This is really scary. You know, always a double-edged sword. They might come up with these dangling carrots, and I'm sure that there are probably millions of people out there reading the story today going, oh my God, they might come up with a cure for schizophrenia. But also remember, just like the biowarfare program, where we're no longer, quote unquote, doing biowarfare research, we're on the defensive side, creating vaccines to protect us. Well, to create the vaccines, they have to have the pathogen. Well, just like this, to create the biowarfare, they have to know how it works. This is frightening. It's frightening. They now know how to create schizophrenia with using one little gene called C4. Thanks to this genetic breakthrough, we can finally see potential for clinical tests, early detections, new treatment, and even prevention. This team emphasizes that the treatments and potential cures are still many years down the track, and scientists still have to figure out exactly what the role is specific to the C4 variants that are playing in the process of synaptic pruning. But we've never been in a better position to address this disease. And that's something to be really excited about, they say. Yeah, and that also is published in the Journal of Nature. All right, so I don't think we ever made it to this one yesterday. This is from July 23rd, 2015, last year, out of Discover Magazine. Insanity virus research advances. The first human trials are underway to test whether an antibody therapy can treat what? Oh, schizophrenia, multiple sclerosis. Yes. Again, some more. Multiple sclerosis was another one of those diseases that they now think they might have early detection capabilities with your voice patterns. Well, now they have something they're working on called an insanity virus. In 2010, Discover Magazine reported on a theory that brain diseases such as multiple sclerosis and schizophrenia might actually have a common source. It's a virus. And remember, they've already come out like with 12 or 15 things that they think can cause schizophrenia. The insanity virus. In June of 2010, researchers found mounting evidence that we carry this virus where? Oh, in our DNA. Just like genes for left-handedness. And yeah, I think we actually read a little bit of this yesterday. What's more, the infections such as influenza picked up from our environment in early life might be the trigger for these diseases. What influenza triggering DNA-based insanity viruses? What? Yes, in theory, millions of years ago, an ancient human ancestor, and I mean, listen to this yarn they're spinning here. The theory, millions of years ago, in land far, far away, an ancient human ancestor contracted a retrovirus that inserted itself into our DNA and into the host's reproductive germ cells, passing the viral DNA down the ancestral line. The virus, called human endogenous retrovirus W, or HERV-W for short, codes for a protein that, when activated, sets off an inflammatory cascade in the brain that leads to symptoms. Now, what's really interesting about something in that last sentence was the fact that it was a DNA virus that inserted itself into the reproductive germ cells of the original host that they say was passed down through genetic code. Well, when we were really digging into last year some of the outbreaks that we were having, we were looking at Ebola, we were looking at measles, we looked at some other things, and we discovered that Ebola, and HIV were both DNA viruses. And that is the first I ever heard of that. Herpes as well as a DNA virus. And I'd never heard of DNA viruses. Well, seems, according to this, that DNA viruses can insert themselves into DNA and be passed down through the ancestral line. Anyway, this theory is gaining traction among psychiatrists, especially as a potential explanation for schizophrenia, a disease once considered a result of bad parenting. Since 2010, clinical trials have tried to target and neutralize that HERV-W coded protein using monoclonal antibody therapy called MAT. Monoclonal antibodies are engineered to target specific receptors on infected cells, like inserting a key into a lock. Once these antibodies bind, the immune system sees these cells as foreign and launches an attack on your DNA. In 2012, this approach passed FDA Phase 1 human trials as a multiple sclerosis treatment. Because of MAT's proven safety, HERV-W expert Hervé Pierron, scientific director of GEO Neuro in Switzerland, is now looking at starting a phase 2 trial for patients with schizophrenia. But Pierron is emphatic. Although the research looks promising, especially for use in MS, a lot still needs to be done until we can see this as a general treatment for schizophrenia or multiple sclerosis. So I wonder, I'll have to look after the show. They just announced, we did a story last week maybe, about them coming up with a potential treatment for multiple sclerosis. So I wonder, because that was 2012, they started those human trials on multiple sclerosis. I wonder if that's the same stuff. All right, so now, keeping in line with pathogens, let's jack ourselves back to Zika. So Zika is spreading. We're seeing it spread all over. I might have even had another story or two right at the end of my awakenedness last night. Oh, yeah. Here we go. So Jane dropped this in chat yesterday. We joked on air yesterday, the day before, just like the Ebola, maybe Brazil's going to start sending in soldiers to battle this epidemic they apparently have. Well, check this out. Brazil has now sent in 200,000 soldiers to stop the spread of Zika virus outbreak, which has seen huge numbers of babies born with small heads and is casting a shadow over the upcoming Olympics. Yes. So not only do we have a new vaccine for dengue that just was released going into phase 3 trials on humans in Brazil, that's at epidemic proportions, we had Oxitec genetically modified mosquitoes released into Brazil right before this quote-unquote outbreak happened. We also, I found a story yesterday, the month that they released those genetically modified mosquitoes, Brazil was also announcing that they were ready to launch their BRICS bank, the competitor to the IMF that was partnering with countries such as China and Russia. Yeah. And now we have Oxitec announcing, we read that yesterday, that genetically modified mosquitoes for Zika just might be the cure and it might kill them and we'll have to keep making them and reintroducing them to all these different countries now to combat this horrible disease. Brazil then sends in 200,000 soldiers, just like we sent to Africa with Ebola, as some sort of potential epidemic is on its way. Brazil has sent more than 200,000 troops to go house to house, just like they did in Africa, in the battle against Zika-carrying mosquitoes. Yes, we're going to shoot them all. Blamed for causing a birth defect epidemic that is spreading rapidly across the world. And remember, they're just concluding that maybe Zika is causing birth defects, but it never was a horrible disease before this. People typically didn't get sick at all until their conclusions just recently. Soldiers will visit homes across Brazil and distribute leaflets and advice. What? Yes. 200,000 soldiers are being put on the street to go door to door to give leaflets and advice, according to Health Minister Marcelo Castro, signaling a major ramping up in the efforts against Zika virus. How long do you think it's going to be before those 200,000 soldiers are going back door to door and lining people up for the brand new experimental vaccines that are going to be coming? The government, under growing pressure with dealing with this crisis, will also hand out mosquito repellents. Oh, well, great use for the soldiers, to at least 400,000 pregnant women on social welfare. I think Brazil just sold all their women. The virus has been linked to serious birth defects, but it hasn't really. They're just saying it has. They think maybe it could be, but we have no proof. Including microcephaly, in which babies born to women infected during pregnancies have abnormally small heads. Concerns remain that this terrifying virus could become a global issue, with Rio hosting the Olympics in the summer. All right, well, we discovered too in some of our research that Zika virus, even though they're posting all these stories about all these states that it's showing up in now in the United States, it's not the mosquitoes necessarily coming here. It's people who have been down in the southern hemisphere who've gotten bitten and now are showing some of the antibodies in their blood for Zika. But their fear is that these are typhoid Marys, that a mosquito could bite an infected person and then go on to bite someone else and spread it. Well, don't worry about that, because guess what? Yesterday, Obama comes out and is now calling for rapid Zika virus research. Obama calls for rapid Zika virus research, yes, as the mosquito-borne disease now spreads. Top health and national security officials are discussing the lack of studies and the lack of a vaccine. Duh, duh, duh. Let's get Obama on the job. Sprinkle more DARPA money to come up with another mandatory vaccine. President Barack Obama on Tuesday called for a rapid development of tests, vaccines, and treatments now to fight the mosquito-transmitted Zika virus, which has been linked to birth defects and could, and it hasn't yet been linked to birth defects, they're thinking it might, and could spread to the United States in the warmer months. All in the name of climate change. U.S. health officials are stepping up their efforts to study a link between Zika virus infections and birth defects, citing a recent study that estimates the virus could reach regions where 60% of the U.S. population lives. Yes, again, remember the dots we connected yesterday with Bill Gates, Oxitec mosquito research, GMO mosquitoes, and depopulation agendas. Obama was briefed on the potential spread of the virus by his top health and national security officials on Tuesday. So now it's all going to be in the name of national security. The president emphasized the need to accelerate research efforts to make better tests better diagnostic tests available to develop vaccines and therapeutics, and to assure that all Americans have information about the Zika virus and steps that they can take to better protect themselves from infection. The virus has been linked to brain damage, but it hasn't. They're just saying that it may be. They don't have any proof of that. In thousands of babies in Brazil, and there is no vaccine or treatment for Zika, a close cousin of dengue and chikungunya, which cause mild fevers and rashes, and they all do, and they just came out with that experimental vaccine that they're doing phase 3 trials in Brazil for dengue. An estimated 80% of people infected have no symptoms at all, and they don't even get sick. So, hey, how wonderful it is that they're just assuming now it's causing these horrific birth defects out of the blue, never before seen. Conveniently after the genetically modified Oxitec mosquitoes were released to fight dengue, making it difficult for pregnant women to know whether or not they've been infected. On Monday, the World Health Organization jumped on board, predicting that the virus would spread to all countries across the Americas, except for maybe Canada and Chile. Why? Why Chile? And you know, what's even more incredible about this is that we just saw before all the horror came out, that they announced with rubbing their hands together at the Davos Economic Forum that how wonderful it was and how much money they're going to make with this brand new dengue vaccine that Sanofi is releasing. Yeah, Davos. So not only have we involved the White House and Bill Gates and Oxitec and the World Health Organization, but guess what? Even the National Institute of Health is getting involved. In a blog post, the National Institute of Health director, Dr. Francis Collins, cited a Lancet study published on January 14th in which researchers predicted the Zika virus could spread in areas along the entire east and west coast of the United States, as well as much of the Midwest during the warmer months, where 200 million people live. Yes. The study is also showing that 22.7 million people live in humid parts of the country where mosquitoes carrying the virus could live year round. Given this threat, Collins says that it is now, quote unquote, critically important to confirm through careful epidemiological studies whether or not a causal link exists between Zika virus infections in pregnant women and microcephaly in their newborn babies. Right, because they haven't verified it yet. Let's create all of this hype around Zika, but it hasn't been verified. Microcephaly results in babies being born with abnormally small heads. There's much to learn about these brand new Zika infections, expert says. For example, and I mean, Zika showed up in 1974. In Africa, I believe. But again, didn't cause any serious symptoms except for, you know, sometimes people got rash and felt a little sick, but it usually went away by itself. There's still much to learn about this Zika infection, experts said. For example, it is not clear how common Zika infections are in pregnant women or when during a pregnancy a woman is at most risk of transmitting the virus to her fetus. Collins said that the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease is also conducting studies. Wow. Look at, we just been able to enable now all these federal institutions to get involved. This is unbelievable. Conducting studies to a more full understanding of the effects of Zika in humans and develop better diagnostic tests to quickly determine if someone has been infected, because originally they were finding it in monkeys. Back in the 70s, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease is also working on testing new drugs, of course they are, that might be effective against the virus. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention also announced new instructions for pediatricians treating infants whose mothers who may have been exposed to the virus during pregnancy. In those guidelines, the CDC made clear that it considers the Zika virus a nationally notifiable condition that instructs doctors to contact their state or territorial health departments to facilitate testing of potentially infected infants. And of course, that will create a nice big fat database of future children who will be great test subjects for some of their new brain therapies. See the connecting dots. Dr. Catherine Edwards, and I've run into this woman's name quite a number of times now in a bunch of different things, of Vanderbilt University, who serves on the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Infectious Disease, says that the guidelines were intended to help establish whether Zika causes microcephaly and to help pregnant women who may have been infected with the virus. They are making a database, people. Through your pediatrician. Microcephaly is a lifelong condition with no known cure, says the CDC website. Symptoms range from mild to severe. In mild cases, infants often have no symptoms other than small head size, but doctors still need to check their development regularly. And in severe cases, babies may need speech, occupational, and physical therapy. The guidelines for testing infants affected by Zika infections follows the CDC guidelines for caring for pregnant women exposed to Zika, which was first reported by Reuters. CDC said last week that it's trying to determine how many pregnant women have traveled to the affected regions in the past several months. Well, yeah, now they better start tracking where you go. And on Tuesday, the CDC added that the U.S. Virgin Islands and the Dominican Republic have now been added to a list of countries and territories with Zika transmissions, bringing the total to 24 countries. The CDC has told pregnant women not to travel to countries and territories in Latin America and the Caribbean affected by Zika. Travel companies, including United Airlines, have begun offering refunds or allowing pregnant women to postpone their trips to regions affected by Zika with no penalty. Well, gee, that's nice of them. There are no global estimates now for how many people in the world have been infected. Oh, my God, says the World Health Organization spokesman Christian Lindmeier on Tuesday. He said that's because Zika has such mild symptoms. This virus has never been on our radar. Yeah, it's just so incredible how out of the blue, never before seen, oh, it's climate change. Lindemeyer said that it was not yet clear whether the virus affecting Brazil and other Latin American and Caribbean countries was a mutated version. Yeah, I knew it. I told you guys, it's going to be a mutation, a mutated version of the virus that's caused prior outbreaks. But he said that the WHO was working with the CDC, oh, another pit of vipers, the Institute of Pasteur in France as well, and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine to establish whether or not it's been a mutation, or, hey, whether or not Oxitec had something to do with it. There's a lot of effort going into this now on the ground, in the laboratories, and everywhere. And yes, they've now put 200,000 soldiers on the ground in Brazil. Just how incredibly frightening. All right. And if not to add insult to injury, so now we have all this mosquitoes as potential disease vectors, which we knew already part of the biowarfare program of old, causing brain disorders and potentially epidemic could spread. We have no idea how many people globally could be infected. Well, hey, all U.S. adults, again, this came out yesterday, it is being recommended that all U.S. adults should be screened for depression, including pregnant and postpartum women. Yeah, see where this is all heading? So now we're going to have recommended depression screening because you know what? Depression is a leading sign of mental illness. Depression also could make you ineligible to own a firearm. Depression could also make you a good target for some of our new experimental treatments. We might even be able to screen you with depression for depression with our new smart app or through your new wearable sweat sensors in your clothing. And we'll make sure we get pregnant women also. Because in pregnancy, you have a lot of things going on in your body, and they want to be able to replicate pregnancy in a laboratory. These new guidelines recommend that all people aged 18 and older, including pregnant and postpartum women, be screened for depression. All adults in the United States, including pregnant and postpartum women, should be screened for depression when they screen the doctor, according to new recommendations released by a government-appointed panel. Yes! Now, if you remember, in Obama's executive actions after Sandy Hook, he had talked about the doctor being the first line of defense in reporting issues with people. This recommendation from the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, I've never heard of them before, is largely consistent with the group's previous recommendations. In 2009, says Karina Davidson, a member of the task force and professor at Columbia University's Medical Center. However, at the time previous recommendations were made, there was not enough evidence for the group to either recommend or discourage depression screening for pregnant or postpartum women. The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force is now making recommendations regarding the effectiveness of preventative health services and also considers whether the benefit of treatments outweigh the potential risk. And remember, they just sprinkled all kinds of federal dollars with that new spending bill into mental health. This task force determined that it's good enough quality evidence to be confident that the benefits of screening for depression outweigh harms for the general adult population. Dun, dun, dun. If you can believe it, we got about 10 seconds left. All right, guys, and we will continue tomorrow. Hope you have an awesome Thursday. Make sure you stick around. We have Ken Blanchup Live next at 7 p.m. Eastern. Then we have Ron Game On Live. Mr. Hal Anthony at 8. Double Cross with Chuck at 10 and 11. SM Gibson with Antimedia Radio. Everyone have an awesome Thursday, and I will catch up with you.